paper if you're interested. But we can always talk and talk, have private discussions, right? And informal discussions later. So that's not a problem. So in the morning, I stopped at the introduction of this Hamiltonian, how the Hamiltonian is constructed, and how the operators in Hamiltonian act on the state of the system. And then you may wonder, because the Hamiltonian is defined in terms of basically, more precisely, the matrix elements of these operators, in particular, these vertex operators, are defined in terms of these three co-cycles, right? But because these are three co-cycles, they are actually equivalence classes of three co-chains. So you may ask, if we have two equivalent three co-cycles, do we have two equivalent models? Or in a sense, do they describe the same topological faces, topological face? And the answer is yes. And briefly speaking, the reason is, maybe I have to skip the proof and just lay down. So suppose you have a model defined by G and alpha, and another one, H, G, alpha prime. And alpha prime are equivalent in the sense of cohomology. And then these two Hamiltonians will be also equivalent in the sense that they can be deformed into each other continuously. Okay, you can in fact define, so if alpha prime is equivalent to alpha, that means alpha can be written as alpha times a coboundary of a two cochain. Okay. In this sense, you can in fact define an alpha t with a continuous parameter t as alpha delta beta t, and this beta t is equals to beta xt to the power of t. So suppose this is the beta. You can show that for any alpha t, okay, in this form, it is equivalent to this alpha with the coboundary of this two cochain.
Yeah. Sorry, how do we know that that's the equivalence?
You mean the equivalence between alpha and alpha prime? Yes, the equivalence, this is the equivalence between two co-cycles. So if two co-cycles are equivalent, it means that they are related by the three co-boundary of a two co-chain. This beta, maybe I should make it clear. This beta is a map from G squared to U1. Okay. So it's just a function. Just consider it's a function of two group variables, and that's it. And this coboundary operator, so let me, I have to write it anyway. So x, y, z. So originally, this beta has two variables, say y and z. So this delta beta x, y, and z is defined in this way. So write beta, always write beta y, z first. And then the next one will be x, y, z with a minus. Yes, it's just the Q problem. You just always try to squeeze the last guy out of the queue. Right, and you get it. This is the coboundary operation from a two cochain to a three cochain. And it's just a three coboundary, sorry. So that's it. And then you can show this alpha t parameterized by this continuous parameter t from 0 to 1, okay, is always a three cocycle that is equivalent to this alpha. Okay. And this. Excuse me?
I mean, the cocycle and cochain are different.
Yeah, cocycle is a closed thing. The closeness is defined by this cocycle condition. I wrote down somewhere in the morning. But anyway. So, and then you can also prove that the Hamiltonian, okay, G alpha prime, acts on a transformed basis of the Hilbert space is the same as the H acts on the original basis. And then these two are connected by a continuous transformation. When t equals 0 is the original model, when t equals 1 is the model defined by alpha prime. And so these two Hamiltonians they just describe the same topological phase without phase transition because it's continuous deformation.
And it's gap. And you're saying it's always the gap.
Right. You never close gap.
So is that the unitary?
Yeah, it is local unitary. You can show that, but I don't have the time to show the math here.
So what's the name of beta again? Co-chain, did you say?
The beta is a two co-chain. Yeah.
And beta to the B, is that also valid co-chain?
Yeah, it's also valid to co-chain. You can show that. And you can show that any, this kind of alpha t defined this way is equivalent to alpha. So it's just
Are you saying the deformation happens within the class of twisted quantum doubles?
Right. Yeah. So it's just a continuous deformation. No phase transition. You don't close the gap.
So you could have chosen a representative of the class.
Right, exactly. So that's why you can always define the model like H, G, alpha. Okay. Or you can just pick any representative. It doesn't really matter. Yeah, then I have to go through this.
Right.
So, but
what does it mean? Like they're like some operator you can kind of.
Yeah, you can show that the. So there's a Professor Vidal just asked, there is a unitary transformation. You have to transform the original basis to a new basis, and then in the new basis, the matrix elements of all the operators in the new Hamiltonian is the same as the original operator in the old basis. It's a U1 local transformation.
Yeah,
U1 transformation. It's just the phase. Yeah.
Okay.
More. I don't have any white ones. Which one? Oh, blue is okay. So okay. Then I can stop talking about the Hamiltonian, the model, and maybe I leave that. So I wanted to talk more interesting stuff, the how to categorize, classify the possible phases that are described by the model. So as we know, a topological phase can be maybe classified, or at least partially classified by the ground state degeneracy, okay, and the fractional statistics, which is associated with the T matrix, and also the S matrix. Okay, this guy actually gives you the number of quasi-particle types. And this is the fractional statistics. And then this gives you quantum dimension and the fusion rules. Traditionally, these guys are calculated from representation theory. But today I'm going to show that you can construct this normally from just three co-cycles, and you get the same result.
So the S matrix also gives you the Moonpole statistic, right? If you take half the types of them and you take one around the other, it will give you the Moonpole statistic. That's not.
Yeah, this T gives you both. Mutual and self.
The T is diagonal, right? It only tells you if you take two particles at the same time and you exchange them. Is that your T?
T is the shear transformation.
But doesn't it involve always the same type of particle?
So you have the same one ring, that's like that figure eight.
Yeah,
that's
it's
so that's why it must be the same type.
It's a topological twist.
maybe that's
so if
right.
you want to characterize asymmetrics contain more information. It's when you have two different so if that diagram this
that's S.
S, yes, yeah. So it allows you to compare particle I and J.
Yes, I see. Okay.
So
but so we call all these kind of things we call all these topological observables. Okay. But in a new model, to see these are really topological observables, you got to prove it, right? You got to show that these are really invariant on the topological moves. So for this purpose, one has to know how the graph can be changed. I mean, on the topological moves. And these topological moves will be apparently the Pachner moves, which relate any two triangulations of a Riemannian surface.
You call that a topological move?
Topological move. Or here we call it mutation moves, because we don't want to involve topology too much.
I thought it was a local move, right? Independent
yeah,
of the topology. Local.
So you can okay, do this, F2, quickly, one triangle, call this expansion into 3, F3, shrink 3 to 1. Okay, keep in mind that these moves have to be understood from a 3 dimension. Not from 2 dimensions. You cannot really understand them in 2 dimensions. They have to be really seen, or visualized in 3 dimensions. In the sense that the starting point, the final, and the final points, the if you put the, stick them together, they bound a tetrahedron. So that's the point. So, but these are abstract moves on the graph, and if you change the graph, you change the Hilbert space, right? So this would induce T1. On from H, let's say this gamma to gamma prime, right? An operator on the Hilbert space. And I will not define this here because it takes too long. So, but after all, you can have a T1 associated with S1 and T2 and T3, define them and show that, and then you can define the ground state projector, which is just the product, all the phase operators and all the vertex operators. Because you know that the ground states are the plus one eigenstates of A, Vs, and DFs. So if you project multiply them together, you get the ground state projector. So any state which is invariant under this projector is a ground state. And then you can show that these T moves, these TIs, they preserve the ground states. So in the sense that TI in P gamma 0 is actually P gamma prime 0 TI, it commute. Okay. But keep in mind, this is on a different graph. But this shows that as far as ground states is concerned, the Hilbert space doesn't change under this topological move.
So we prove that the ground state space is independent of triangulation.
Right.
And so it follows that the ground state degeneracy also independent of
precisely.
But you still have to show the T matrix. I mean, it's less direct. It doesn't show right away that the T matrix and S matrix are invariant.
Yeah. You have to work on that too. So, but I don't have time for that. And you can also show TI on any of this ground state is just a phi and psi. So this shows that this T is preserved the inner product on the ground states. Okay. And then you can define. Oh, cool. Got a blank one here. So you can define GSD, the ground state degeneracy, as simply the trace of this ground state projector evaluated on any gamma. on any gamma because it's independent. Then this these mutation moves, or topological moves, they not only enable you to study these topological observables, but did I turn it on? Yes. They also enable you to study these topological observables in a convenient way because you can always transform the very complicated graph where your model is defined on to a very simple one. Then let's think about towers. If you think about towers, you can draw a very complicated triangulation of a torus, but that's stupid to do the calculations on a very complicated triangulation. But because of these topological invariants, you can always do things like this. Okay, always transform the graph into the simplest triangulation of a torus with only two triangles. But then after the identification of the boundaries, you end up with just a single vertex. But it doesn't matter. For the purpose of calculation, you can keep the labels of the vertices differently.
These arrows have nothing to do with the previous arrows, right? These arrows are just identifying.
They are also consistent to that identification because you can assign.
The branching has to be going down.
Yes.
Right?
Sure. They are consistent though. What you meant now is you were identifying.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Okay. So after identification, these four guys will be identified, these four vertices. But when you do the calculations, you can just assume they are different and carry out the calculations. So here you can see, I don't have to write on that. Then you can see what are truly the ground states by acting on this graph, the ground state projector, right? So I have to, you act on it, you get a bunch of three cocycles, right? And which looks very complicated, but they can be simplified to a very compact and beautiful form by revealing the hidden mathematical structure in these three cocycles, or physically in this topological degrees of freedom on this torus. So I'm going to directly show that. So I should remind you about the ground state projector in this case of torus. So this P0 on a torus is simply 1 over G sum over X AX, this X is an element in G. Because there is only one vertex, right, after all, so you don't have to label the vertices. So it's just one operator there. And then you can show. You can show that this AX on GH. You can label the states by simply G and H. Yeah, this is projected to the ground states of the. Is this only one vertex?
So you actually don't.
There's only one.
It would be a problem of many constraints, but there is only one.
Yeah, there's only one. So you just one guy. So the. So the result will be a bunch of three cocycles, messy. But then you can actually reduce it to such a compact form. Let me write it down first and then explain it. So beta G, you may wonder what these beta G are. X minus 1, XH, X minus 1. And we call this guy beta G H X. Okay. Now here comes the key mathematical structure in the whole construction. Let's just remove these. So what is this beta A, this weird beta A here? Beta G, sorry. So, but I would like as beta A for generosity. So this beta A you see is defined as in terms of these three cocycles. Because when you really act the AX operator on the state, you will get a bunch of three cocycles. But then you can reorganize them and by using three cocycle conditions and put them into two different combinations of only three cocycles. So this is definition of this beta in terms of alpha. This beta A is what we call a twisted two cochain cocycle, sorry, not a cochain, not just the cochain. So this is a twisted two cocycle. It actually satisfies this twisted two cocycle condition. So this delta. If without this guy, it's just the same as a two cocycle condition, right? But now it's sort of twisted by this element X. So this part is a little different, apart from the usual two cycle. You see, that's the two cocycle condition, but you have a little difference here. So this is called a twisted two cocycle. And then what's the point of this twisted two cocycle? And you can define this eta, okay, more compactly. And this eta will turn out to be very useful. Later. So then you can see that the Hilbert space, the ground state Hilbert space, is actually spanned by these vectors. Moment. Excuse me?
What does that notation mean? This beta with the subscript?
It's just the beta is indexed by a group element A. Mm-hmm. And you can see the meaning here. So you can see now you can, because this is the
first line,
it's defining that.
Up there, and you replace the A by X inverse A X and you replace everyone in the expression.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so this A is actually now not really a variable. There are only 2 degrees of freedom here, and you can. So now you see this is the action of AX on any state, and then you put it here, then you can see that the ground states are actually spanned by these linear combination of vectors. So each of this linear combination is a ground state vector, okay. But this still looks too complicated. You already projected on the face operators. Yes, right. Mm-hmm. So face operator is ignored. Thanks for bringing it up. I just.
Actually, there. So this twisted or two-set cocycle. So you seem like you are defining using every three cocycle. You have a way of turning a three cocycle into two cocycle, but not honest truthful cycle or twisted truthful
right.
cycle.
Right.
And so it's like it's have a different complex. I mean, yeah, well, I
right, it has a different complex. And you see, when if all these variables are in the centralizer of this group element A, a centralizer means anything that is that commutes with the group element, right? Then this reduces to a usual two-hole cycle rather than a twisted one. Okay. So now this is the how ground state Hilbert space expanded, and then at this point, I think it tempts one to think that the ground state degeneracy is simply the size of the homomorphisms from the fundamental group of torus to the group and quotient by the conjugate equivalence relation. So you see only count so there's overcounting here. Only all the conjugate elements are actually equivalent, right? So you are thinking that maybe you are just the
you mean by conjugation action G. So you let G act on the homes.
Act on both G and H. So you put only any G and H here, and then you conjugate these G and H simultaneously. You got the equivalent one. So you got to conjugate it. And you may think that the GSD from this basis of the ground states, you may think that GSD is just this one. But is it true?
Is that an upper bound?
That looks very much like that.
Do you think this is the equal sign?
No, I'm asking, is that at the very least an upper bound? Is this giving you an upper bound to the ground state degeneracy on the curve?
Yes, you're right.
But you want to show that these guys are linear independent?
Yeah, in fact, this is not true. This is not true in general. You are overcounting things. Because this H cannot live in the entire group. After you projected out this G, H can only take values in the centralizer of the G. So if you do things like that, you're overcounting the degrees of freedom in the ground states. So this is not the true formula in general, but it can be true in special cases. For example, when alpha is trivial, or this beta, or this twisted two-co cycle is trivial, this formula will turn out to be true, but in general, it's not.
So,
and the true form. Excuse me.
You
I can. I'm gonna show you the true formula.
Okay. So in divergent, do they already have a twist in divergent already, or in some formulation of the node? Do they have such thing in the?
Do they who?
Divergent's work.
No, they don't.
They never have the twist.
They have the twist. They have this twist, but in the end, when they get to when they were calculating the partition function, they had this twist, but then when they were constructing the S and T matrices, they couldn't really work out the general case when there is a twist. Yeah. So what they worked out is the trivial case when this twisted two-co cycle is trivial.
But they managed to come up with partition function anyway. So they add twist later on.
Okay, so. I should keep this here. So the problem is, without introducing the properties of this nasty beta A, how can I make sense of this formula?
So we have 25 seconds left. Do you think it would be worth announcing the results and explaining?
Yes, yes. Yeah. I'm going to just directly write down the ground state degeneracy.
And explain what it means.
Yes. Okay. Without going through what beta is. So the two, ground state degeneracy. Okay. Now you see, you can just take the trace of this operator. Right? Just take the trace. You can get So G, H, X, or in G, but with constraints, GH commute, GX commute, and HX commute. And then this eta, HX. So you're going to see that with these constraints, which means H is in the centralizer of G, and X is in the centralizer of both G and H. And in such a case, this eta will turn out to be a one-dimensional representation of the centralizer of G and H. So this eta will be a one-dimensional representation, irreducible representation of the centralizer of both G and H. Whatever. So after all, this is the result, which I don't have time to show. This A is the This is the number of conjugacy classes of the group finite group G. So suppose it is Cn. Suppose this is the abelian group Zn. How many conjugacy classes there? N, right? Because it's abelian. And then what is this R? This R is the so-called number of irreducible beta GA regular representations of the centralizers here. So that's why I said without the details, it's hard to explain what this is.
But then,
let me just write down the other form of this formula. So number of beta GA. So this GA is just any chosen representative of the conjugate class that this G belongs to. Okay. Irrep of ZA. ZA just any conjugate class of this group G. And this beta, here comes the point of this twisted Foucault cycle. This twisted Foucault cycle beta A, it actually classifies the projective representations of the centralizers of any element in this group G. So this is the, so which means suppose you have representation of X, okay, representation of Y. These are the projective representations. It equals to beta A X Y rho X Y. In the linear representation, there's no factor here. But in projective representation, there is a phase factor.
You better erase the beta on the left, it's kind of confusing.
So now, and this is indexed by A. So if you change A, you change the class of irreducible projective representations. Right? And these X and Ys have to be in the centralizer of this A. That's it. So this is the mathematical meaning of this twisted Foucault boundary, Foucault cycle, sorry. And then this is the true formula of ground state degeneracy. And then in the case of Zn, as I might be able to show later, you can see there are n conjugate classes, right? So Rzn equals n. And then this factor will turn out to be also n because the centralizer of any element in Zn is Zn itself, because all the other elements commute because this is a abelian group, right? So it turns out that this R is also n. So the GSD of Zn is just n squared. So which complies with the results. For example, in toric code model, in Z2 is just 4, Z3 is 9. And in special cases, it'll reduce to this guy. Well, this is larger. I shouldn't say reduce, but mathematically, it's reduced. Reduction. Yeah, when alpha is trivial, it's just torical.
Yes. So
yeah.
That's the example you
took.
Is there something deeper?
Yeah. When you go to, for example, zm square, it's still the same, okay? Zm square don't give you anything that is not very special in terms of three co-cycle, these twisted two co-cycles. After zm, all the twisted two co-cycles will be just trivial. But when you go to zm cube, some non-trivial twisted two co-cycles will show up. And in that case, you will stick to this formula rather than that. But apart from, but when it's just zm or zm square, you can simply use this formula to get a ground state degeneracy. Of course, you can always use this one, right? It's always right, but that's.
For Z2, you still have twisted version, twisted particle.
No.
Because
not cycle, so you don't have any.
No, you have twisted ones, but the ground degeneracy is the same.
But I'm not disappointed by that. It's okay. So it's I mean, ground degeneracy on the
first
four, that's fine.
Yeah, in Z2, you have two different cocycles. One is alpha zero.
Is zero. Class or are they the same?
Yeah, two classes. Two classes in Z2. Yes. So let me just mention that. Because I won't have time for that anyway. So in Z2, let's say, so you have alpha zero and alpha one. Okay, this alpha zero will just in this way just give you a toric code, and also it is dual to Levin-Wen model. Okay, in the case of when the string types are given by the representations of Z2. Authentic representations of Z2. When it's alpha one, it doesn't correspond to toric code because it's not. But it is actually dual to Levin-Wen. Okay, in the case of a double semiol, Levin-Wen. Okay, so in a more interesting case. U1, U1, double just that. It corresponds to double U1. Yeah. So in the case of Z3, okay, there will be three cocycles, independent ones, okay, alpha 0, alpha 1, and alpha 2. This alpha 0 is still KIF, always. And it is also dual to Levin-Wen. And there is only one Levin-Wen in the case of Z3. But there are two more here which do not correspond to Kilayev and are not dual to any Levin-Wen because there are no Levin-Wen in such a case. So these are the two new models defined. Yeah. And the interesting thing is that you can actually, well, I have it tabulated here. You can list the eigenvalues or the topological spins of the T matrix, okay? And then you can show that under complex conjugation, these two models are transformed into each other, and this is not seen in, for example, Levin-Wen model, because there is only one, but I only say complex conjugation, but not time reversal, because we don't really know what is time reversal, how is this defined in our model. And complex conjugation can be thought as time reversal in the case of spin zero, right, by definition.
But this is not spin zero somehow.
I don't know.
I don't know.
So you mentioned before there was a relation between these models and rational
CFD. Exactly. So I can skip the rest and mention that to you.
If it were time reversal, then it breaks, those two states break time reversal.
Yeah, if that was. Exactly. But I don't know what is time reversal. You might be able to work on it. So, so see if.
I only found the last.
So there's a correspondence between the Tracy quantum double model and the rational CFTs. The rational CFTs that are the orbifolds by G, okay, of a holomorphic CFT. Not all the RCFTs, but only the RCFT, okay, as orbifolds by the same finite group G, for example, okay, of a holomorphic CFT. And here we consider more generalized orbifolds, which is not just orbifolds quotient by G, but also twisted by alpha. So you can define RCFTs in such a way as well. Okay. And in this case, there is a level by level correspondence. Because these are, you obtain these orbifolds, for example, from the sigma model with a WZW type interactions, right? And there's a level in the WZW. Okay? This level is in general an integer k. And this level by level correspondence between TQD, okay, well, let me just write H G alpha, and this RCF is G orbifold. Let's say G alpha orbifold. So because most of the time you're dealing with the cohomology group, right? So it's these classes, for example, in Zn, you can order them by an integer, right? For example, here as what we did here, alpha 0, alpha 1, and alpha 2. You can use an integer to specify these equivalence classes of three co-cycles. And then it turns out that if you use the same alpha at the same level k to twist this orbifold, G orbifold, you get a RCF, this WZW interaction term at level k, the same level. So this is a level by level correspondence.
So I don't have any rational component. So on the left hand side, there's no the concept of level. Okay? On the right hand side, somehow you have some.
Well, you can, of course, you can give it a concept of levels, that's what we did here, right? Because in these three, there are three different classes.
The orbifold levels, is that? But I thought you said.
No, the levels of WZW term.
So they're different levels. Anyway.
Yeah. You have a 1 over k.
Yeah.
Okay, this level k that defines this.
So you mean what you're saying, this k on the right hand side has some structure, and alpha somehow acts on those things, I mean, to preserve the levels on the right hand side.
I don't know what you're asking. So for this is a, how to say, this correspondence is not something that you find in a transformation that can take things here to there. This is just an observation that there is such a level by level correspondence.
So could there be an example?
The example is, for example, I'm not going to give you a concrete example, but how to map the topological numbers here onto something there. Okay. So the GSD here equals the number of primary fields, right? So this is natural.
Like the connection, they have bundles with flat connections, right?
Yes, all flat connections. Flat connections, which means zero flat, whatever. So this is natural, right? Because primary fields in CFT, they're just they're the field operators that can be annihilated by the positive modes of Virasoro algebra. They are just something analogous to ground states. Right? So that this is why GST can be equal to the number of primary fields of this G orbifold twisted by alpha.
In a chiral phase, in an NM model with chirality. Say that the chiral semion, you find that the ground state degeneracy on the top is 2, and that the chiral CFP has 2 parameter fields. So it's an example of what you said. But in that case, I think there is a much deeper connection. So the CFT is describing the boundary theory of the bulk.
Of the CS, Jim Simon.
So when you, in the bulk, you have the NM theory, and if you have the gap theory in the bulk, I'm telling you.
I have no idea.
In that case, in that particular case, what you are, there is something analogous to what you are saying, but it's not a generic correspondence without understanding any deeper connection. It's actually, the CFT is describing the boundary of the NN model in the bulk. Okay? So these are two pieces of the same theory in that case. So I would be very
That's cool. I would love to. I would love to learn it. So when we talk tomorrow, then I would like to. Would like to learn more about it. Yeah. So far, I just observed this correspondence without understanding more deeper. You know, physical insights. So and then you can see that when we label the states in this way, in our case, and this is just the conformal blocks on the CFT side. And the ground states, now we can label the ground states by A and mu. What is A? A labels the number of the classes, conjugate classes of Qi. And this mu labels different representations, okay, in each class for this for the centralizer. Why we can use the same label index for the centralizer is because the centralizer of any group element in the same conjugate class is actually isomorphic to another one. So you can use the same index to label the other centralizers of the elements in the conjugate class. So that's why you can label your ground states by A and mu, a pair of variables A and mu. Okay, and this A and mu, what are these A and mu on this side? It's just the so-called one loop characters, one loop characters of the holomorphic sector. It counts the number of fields, okay, in the entire chiral sector, including primary and all its descendants. And then you can see the relation between the conformal block and this one loop character. The linear relation between these two guys is exactly the same as the linear relation between these two guys. So this is something I don't have time to write down, which is listed here. So I can basically write it. So what is A mu? A mu is one over square root of Qi. The size, of course. And Qi in any conjugate class, and sum over H in the centralizer of Qi, okay, and times, this chi will be a little confusing to you because I used it for the holomorphic character of the CFT, but this chi means the character or the trace of the projective representation of the centralizer Z Q times the times G and H. Okay. On the CFT side, maybe let me use a different notation for the one loop character. So let's call it kappa. Okay. So kappa G kappa kappa G mu A mu, sorry, is the same, exactly the same linear transformation, G in CA, H in ZG. And here is the same chi, H, and here is the conformal block. H and G. So this is the complete correspondence. What? The level.
When you say level by level,
yeah, it's the same alpha. If the same alpha says alpha 1, then on this side it's twisted by alpha 1 as well. No, you cannot, if you use alpha 2, it's a different thing. And then and this space is labeled by A mu. It turns out to be the eigenbasis of the T matrix. It just happens to be. So, and then the eigenvalues.
Sorry, you said that this basis is the eigenbasis?
Yes.
Okay, so I was going to ask you this. So when you study any models, one natural basis, to assume that in the curve you have all the time plugged in one direction. This is precisely the eigenbasis of T. So your basis then is, you can understand it as having a lot of time plus.
Exactly. So why this centralizer comes in here? The physical picture is like this. This is the flux. Okay, you have, on the torus.
So you label the flux by the A.
Right. Exactly. If you project out this one of the fluxes, okay, then the remaining symmetry is not the entire G. It's actually the centralizer of the. So this is torus. Right? You have these two directions of fluxes, right? So you label this one as H, this one as G, this one as H. And if you measure one of the fluxes by projecting it out, okay, then the remaining global symmetry is not the entire G anymore. It's actually only the centralizer of this G. Okay. And then representations, the irreducible representations of the centralizer of G give you the charges, which is labeled by this mu. So this is the physical picture. This is just math. Yeah, thanks.
Do you extract the S by just taking this basis, rotating it into the other? So you have a basis now where you have a distinguished direction in the torus. And if you change the direction on the torus, so you could build an analogous basis but where you change the role, the two cycles that you have, the non-trivial loops on the torus, and you'll get a new basis. And the overlap between those would be the S matrix. Is that how you compute the S matrix?
No, we compute the S matrix naively from three cycles. Yeah. And then we can put we can then cast the S matrix in the spaces and obtain the matrix elements of the S matrix. So we didn't use the way you just described. We just directly look down what is the transformation on torus, and then write down three cocycles, and then we can obtain the S matrix. But usually, that's what you described.
There's a talk starting now. One for rounders.
Yeah, basically, I described the main results, and thanks for asking about this correspondence. And I would like to learn more from you. Yeah.